Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everybody, to Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast. It's freshly delivered for you here. We're back, and I'm so excited to be here. And with me, as she is always and will be until at least we're done with this project or she's sick of me, the one and only, the very ever-patient, Drea Kaufman.
Until I'm done with you? Is that until I'm bored with you?
I mean, that or you could just, you know, finally like Ron and Harry in this chapter with Hermione, they're like, oh, we're glad you're mad at us, go away.
Well, rest assured, I don't foresee that happening, so everyone can rest assured.
Oh, that's good. Well, you know what, it was really a fun thing that's happened recently to us was we got a blog review. Somebody wrote about Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast, on their blog. Friend of the show, listener, I've known her for a long time on Twitter. Her name's Amy Shaw. She has a great website called, it's ACSHAWYA.com. That's her website. And she reads a lot of YA literature, and she does a lot of great reviews. Fantastic site. But she reviewed some podcasts, and one of them happened to be Owl Post as well as Punch It. She was talking about literature podcasts, and she said this about Owl Post, and this is just so fun. We wanted to say thank you to her. She said, Owl Post is a fairly new podcast that is a must-listen for any fan of the Harry Potter books. Each episode is an interesting discussion of a chapter of the books, and they're still early in their first book, so it won't take you too long to catch up. I tend to pick and choose my way through episodes of most podcasts I listen to, but I'm subscribed to this one and actually listen to each episode quickly after it airs, rather than my usual tactic of keeping them backlogged and open for myself. So thank you so much, Amy. It's great to know that we're on the top of the list there in your podcast listening.
It totally made my day.
How awesome is that?
It totally made my day.
Are you riding on cloud nine right
now? A little bit.
Or, I'm sorry, your Nimbus 2000?
Yes, that one.
Oh, goodness. Well, we really appreciate that, Amy. That meant a lot to us. We thank you so much for listening, for promoting us on your blog, as well as Punch It, our sister podcast here on the network, done by Tristan Riddell and Charlene Schmidt, as they talk about literature and writing from a different aspect. So I really hope you'll check that out, as well as all the shows here on the Nerd Party. You can find all of those shows at thenerdparty.com. You can also find us all on iTunes. We love being on iTunes. Everybody's finding us there, and we've been getting so many great listener reviews recently. We really appreciate it. And it's definitely helping people find the show. So keep those coming. We'll keep thanking you on air for your reviews. And you just keep helping out the show by rating and reviewing us. If you want to talk to us, have any feedback, you can go over to the website at thenerdparty.com/contact. You can choose Owl Post, and that'll come to Drea and I. We've got our Facebook page. You can check that out at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And of course, Twitter is a great place to catch up with us at Join Nerd Party. Whew. With all of that fun praise, now we're right in the middle of the book because we've reached Halloween.
I guess it's true. The books do sort of follow a seasonality. Start with summer and then end at the end of the school year right before summer starts again. So I guess I hadn't really... No, I mean, I noticed that, but like I hadn't really put it together. So, yeah, I guess we are like right in the middle.
Well, and what I really enjoyed about the chapter was just the way it started, and that it started from Malfoy's perspective, kind of, with him not being able to believe his eyes that Harry and Ron are actually still at Hogwarts that next day. He thought he had wrapped it all up to get them caught, and they had found a way to alleviate that for themselves. And my favorite thing about this at the very beginning was just that Ron and Harry haven't learned anything yet, because to them that was a grand adventure and they're looking for more.
Yeah, and this is also where Harry gets his broom, which also sets Malfoy off and thinks they're going to get in trouble for having the broom. So it's kind of all about Malfoy really wanting to get Harry and Ron in trouble. And it's just so entertaining, like that vindictive nature and how much it just does not get fulfilled here. It's really great for the reader because you're like, yeah, suck it, Malfoy.
That is kind of how you feel. And I think that's probably how Harry and Ron feel here. And I actually think they feel that way about Hermione as well, because, well, they're loving it. She's refusing to speak to them. But I love the way that Rowling says this. She says, but she was such a bossy know-it-all that they thought that this was an added bonus.
Right. They weren't friends yet, at least not to the end of this chapter. And it was surprising to me to remember while rereading this, like, how long it takes for them to actually get Hermione as a friend. Like, you're introduced to her in like chapter 3 or 4, but it takes forever to get to that friendship level. So, I mean, technically halfway through the story, but more than halfway through the book, and we still don't have Hermione in the Trinity yet. So it was really interesting.
No, absolutely wonderful. And I also like that there's this fun... I mean, Ron and Harry are really inseparable now, and they have been bonded together by this adventure that they've gotten, you know, with the Midnight Duel, getting away with it. They are spending all week trying to find a way to plan their revenge, basically, against Malfoy. Hermione's not bothering him anymore. Life couldn't be any better, at least they thought. And then McGonagall does something that makes people, and just in case they didn't hate Harry enough, like people talking about him, they send him with like 6 owls carrying it in his new broomstick.
I know, like she couldn't have thought of a subtler way to give him that. Like have it waiting for him in his room or something, so he's not, it's like announced to the whole school, like
have him stay after class, right? You know, call him to her office. Anything but, oh, in the middle of everybody eating breakfast and you getting your owl post, look at this package that Harry Potter got that he's not even allowed to open at the table.
I know. Well, and, you know, there's a part of you that's like, come on, McGonagall, you could have been subtler. But then there's a part of you that's like, she probably knew Harry needed it. Like, he needed a little bit of the fanfare. He needed a little bit of people thinking that he's important, like, in terms of, like, not that he's the chosen one or that he is like this famous person, but, you know, Harry needed a little bit of vindication that like he got a package the same way all these other kids are getting packages from school. Like, I think the chapter starts with Malfoy getting a bunch of treats from home and everyone sitting around eating the sweets at the table. So, I mean, I think it was kind of her way of trying to give him a sense of normalcy, but kind of just turned into like a big spectacle.
Well, and It doesn't help that he's not able to open it, and he walks out of the Great Hall with Ron, and who should be there, but of course, Malfoy with Crabbe and Goyle, talking about, oh, you're going to be in so much trouble, you got a broom, and I love that Flitwick was like, oh, yes, Professor McGonagall told me all about it, and the special circumstances, and I'm thinking, wow, this really is a fun commentary on the way in which people will bend over backwards for sports in schools.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like, I don't know, he's definitely getting special treatment here, and that as a rule follower, like as someone who follows all the rules, it irks me a little bit, especially because I also don't watch sports, like, at all. So don't ask me anything about that. Which I think I've already mentioned, but yeah, no sports for me. Like Super Bowl, I think we watched a movie and I don't know, whatever. Anyway, completely off topic. So it bothered me a little bit that they got to break the rules for him. But I mean, they had to introduce Quidditch somehow. And if you're, I mean, as a element to the book, it was interesting, but.
But it does seem like, too, that it's not new at the school for there to be special circumstances regarding around Quidditch, you know.
Right.
And I will say, too, it's not just sports that will get special commendation. We're going to see this later on in book three with Hermione.
Yeah.
So it's not as though they only prize, you know, athletic ability. But that is part of it, you know. And I think, you know, with Harry, it's so interesting because you do have a kid here who is naturally gifted at this sport, you know, and flying. And therefore, you know, there's no reason not to allow him to use that talent and have it fostered. And it's nice to see that Hogwarts is a place that respects the abilities that students have and allows them to spread their wings and fly.
Just like every other 90s inspirational ballad.
I know. I mean, if I had long, you know, hair and everything, I could sing it for you in a husky voice, but I'm not going to do that. So
whip out your ball gown and...
Oh, man. Yeah. Leather jacket and everything. So what's great here, too, I love the way that Harry retorts here to Malfoy saying, well, it is true, you know, that without you, Malfoy, I wouldn't have gotten this broom.
Yeah. I did like that he rubbed it in a little bit. Yeah.
Yes.
He did.
It's fantastic.
He did rub his face in the poop a little bit like you do a bad dog. Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, I feel like Harry's getting to fulfill all his fantasies that he could never do in the Dursleys' house because he actually has people who kind of have his back now between some of the teachers on his side, and, you know, he has his own little tribe that's growing. So, that was pretty funny.
Best part about it, though, is Hermione apparently in the background somehow just being like, I suppose you think it's a reward for breaking the rules.
That would be me, though. It would be like, yeah. I would be like, yeah, right? Hermione and I would be best friends.
Don't you just love that Harry's like, I thought you weren't speaking to us. And then Ron's like, yes, please don't stop now. It's doing us so much good.
They are so mean to her. In this first part of the book, they are just so much meaner to her than they are in the movie. I think it was interesting, too, in this chapter. I mean, we learn a lot about Quidditch. This is where we really get introduced to, like, how the game works and what the balls are and the players are and stuff. But it's really interesting that we also got introduced to Charlie Weasley a little bit more than we don't really get him in the movies at all. He's sort of talked about, especially in the fourth one, but we don't ever see him. He's not actually cast. And so it's really interesting because they don't talk about him nearly as much in the movies. When we hear like that, I wouldn't be surprised if Harry turned out to be better than Charlie Weasley. He could have played for England if he hadn't gone off chasing dragons. And I think that's the first time we hear about a Weasley potentially being like successful and famous and of their own volition beyond, you know, Percy climbing the ranks at the ministry later on. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Kind of stood out to me.
No, that is a really good point. And I like that they, I think what it says, and it's so interesting because the Weasley family, except for Percy, who we're going to excise from this for a second, is a family that doesn't seem to care much for celebrity.
Right. They don't like the glory or the money. They value the values.
They follow their passion. Yeah. Like, they have a family where it's okay to be passionate about something like dragons or muggle things or just muggles in general, or being, you know, like Mrs. Weasley being a fantastic mother.
And witch. You know, she's a fantastic witch.
She is. And we'll find that out in the seventh book. You're going to have to wait a while. But, oh, man, when it comes hard and fast.
She goes Mama Bear, and I love it.
Oh, it's wicked awesome. So, no, absolutely. And I think what makes it so wonderful is that Harry is a perfect fit for that family, you know, because Harry is very much like them in the sense that he's passionate, he's driven, he's caring, he has all of these traits that make him, in a lot of ways, the perfect surrogate Weasley. He just doesn't have the red hair. And I think that's one of the reasons that him and Ron fit together so well. As we talked about at the beginning, they both have some of the same insecurities, but then also they have similar personalities that just mesh so well. And they have some strengths that the other one doesn't have, and that helps too. And so it just creates a nice blend here. And I love that you point that out, because I love that we actually get to see Charlie Weasley in the fourth book. He's a fun character.
He is. It really disappoints me that he wasn't included in the films. I mean, I get you have to make your choices, but...
Absolutely. Now, I have to say, I pretty much imagine this talking about Quidditch with Oliver Wood, just like it's in the movie, because yeah. That kid who plays him is kind of adorable, mm-hmm. and his accent is fantastic. That Scottish accent mm-hmm. is just wonderful. So I missed that in the book that he doesn't say, you know, it's wicked fast and Damned are impossible to see, you know?
Mm-hmm. You do that really well. Well done.
I hear that in my head, though. And but I like the way... You know, Oliver is it seems to be used to training people, and Harry just keeps picking things up so quickly. He's just like, you can see him rising on cloud nine as he's like watching, you know, he's seeing Gryffindor win before his eyes with this kid, you know?
I feel like, and I'm trying to find it, I don't think we actually... see it, but I always imagined that he kind of looked like a kid in a candy store, like that this was the best thing that had ever happened to him in a long time, was getting someone as talented as Harry. And that, like, I think in this book he's got 2 years left at Hogwarts, so the year we're in and then the next year, and then I think he moves on. I think he's one of the quite older students at Hogwarts. So I think that he was maybe starting, I imagine he, like, I have this whole story conceived in my head. He's like, let go of the idea of winning the cup. And like, this is like, he now sees his like victory, his chance to do it before he leaves and get his name on one of the plaques or trophies or whatever they have in the hall. And yeah, that's kind of what I'm like picturing going through Oliver Wood's head while he's teaching Harry Potter Quidditch.
No, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. And I also, to, you know, we mentioned Charlie, but I like the way that he talks about the twins. He's like, don't worry, the Weasleys are more than a match for the Bludgers. I mean, they're like a pair of human Bludgers themselves.
It's true, though. It's so true. I loved it. I love the description of the twins. They, like, yes. The more I learn about the twins in the book, the more I love them, and the more it makes their story so heartbreaking. But yeah, I do. I love his description. Like, they're such menaces. Like, everything you know about them right now is like, I want to watch them from afar. I don't want to get too close.
Well, and the fun thing that's about this chapter is it's kind of covering a lot of time. Like, you get the feeling that we're covering most of October.
Yeah.
And obviously through the end of it with Halloween. And it gives you this sense, and there's that thing they do in books where there's kind of a demarcation point in the chapter, so it kind of lets you know time has passed or you're on to a different scene. And she does that here after they talk about Quidditch. And there's this nice beginning paragraph talking about Harry and him becoming so much more comfortable, and how, again, he compares it to the Dursleys, that the castle feels more like home than the Dursleys ever did. And he also, at the same time, his lessons are, he's finding them enjoyable, and he's getting into the routine, and he's in mastering the basics. And so you get this sense as well that, you know, Harry might not be the kind of student Hermione is, but you also get the feeling that Harry's a pretty decent student. Like, he's got some natural inclinations for all of this.
Yeah. And I agree. I think I think it's comforting to him, because if you remember earlier in the book, he was worried about being a total failure at everything. So I think being able to dig in the studies and find them interesting and be somewhat naturally inclined to them is really comforting to him as well, beyond just be the physicality of Hogwarts. So
it's a wonderful feeling in this chapter that I get. It's kind of one of those, I mean, you're really in the middle of the book, and it's giving you this nice sense that our main character is finding himself comfortable And that's always a fun place to be in a story.
Well, and it's interesting because she paints him as being pretty comfortable, but she also paints it as, like, she also uses other auditory senses in you to make you feel comfortable. Like, where she talks about the delicious smell of baking pumpkin. Like, that to me is really comforting to think about, like, warm pastries or warm pumpkin pie. Like, that smell just reminds you of Halloween and Thanksgiving, and it's kind of comforting. So she also, like, engages that to help add to the feeling of this being home and comfort and warm and inviting. So I thought it was really interesting because it doesn't really have any other place there where she put it in the book. It's definitely meant to make you feel like warm and inviting.
Yeah, no, I love that you're calling that out because I was reading it today at lunch and all I could think to myself was, I want pumpkin pie.
I really wanted like warm pumpkin chocolate chip cookies when I was reading this. Like, I really wanted that cinnamon pumpkin smell.
Maybe a pumpkin spice latte.
Yeah, something like that.
Anything would have been, yeah, I was exactly feeling that. And it was fun, too, to just to be able to see some more of the classes. You know, they're in Flickwick's Charms class and, you know, the whole scene that's in the movie where they're doing the feathers and all. And I think that was enjoyable as well because you get this sense at this moment until we get to the Halloween scene where everything is kind of routine. Like, you know, like everything feels like there's this lull, but the storyline is about to pick right back up by the end of this chapter. Like, we're really going to get into things because at the beginning here, that one thing that we didn't talk about was that Harry had filled Ron in on the whole thing about the what he thought might be under the trap door, and they were trying to figure out what it is, and that they knew it was about 2 inches in, you know, diameter, but there's no way they were going to ever figure that out. But nobody else wanted to talk about it. Hermione wasn't talking about them, and Neville wanted nothing to do with it. So there is that at the beginning of the chapter, but then you get this long, you know, almost like month-long time period where nothing else happens until Halloween.
And I love that we get a glimpse into Seamus's character here, too, just a little bit, because later on it becomes more... It becomes a thing that he, like, blew up his feather...
Yes.
It just made me laugh because I'm just remembering the scene
absolutely
in the movie.
Absolutely fantastic.
It's just such a little aside, but it's just the little things that make me really, just make me giggle sometimes. Yeah, it was really neat that she really brought the argument between Ron and Hermione sort of to a climax here where they really argued. In the movie, it was definitely not the same intensity with which they bicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes more sense in the book why she stormed off in such like a huff, if you will, afterwards when Ron was talking crap about her behind her back, because that's not cool. That's not cool, Ron. That's not cool.
No, it's not. And it's one of those things that it's nice to see Rowling let the kids be kids and do things that kids do, which kids have a way of being really cruel to each other. And obviously it's not glorified at all because, and I love the way that Harry is just kind of caught in the middle between these two.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I think she heard you. And Ron's like, so, you know, and I think it's interesting too, because Ron comes from that kind of large family where this stuff has to probably happen a lot, you know,
they've got
where
real
you kind of bicker
screen.
Back and forth. Yeah. And you're yelling at each other and that kind of stuff. And it just becomes a thing. And you know, the only way to get back at each other is to say something snarky and mean, and Ron's definitely doing that. And Harry's just like, I don't know. I mean, he's not going to say anything, but he's probably thinking to himself, just let it go, guys. Just let it go.
I feel like it's weird cause they're 11. So they've been at school before, but I feel like this is one of the first times that, all these kids are sort of being confronted with their lifestyle not being the norm, right? Like that Ron thinks kind of talking smack under his breath is what you do because he's got a big family and that's what they all do. You know, Harry going back to his default of just being quiet and trying to not be noticed is what he does. You know, Hermione's always had to be the smartest and has no one's ever told her like not to do that. So that's what she does.
Right.
It's like where all of these are clashing together and everyone's sort of realizing that like it's not always going to be the same for everybody. So it's really interesting because you'd think it would have already happened. Maybe not. Maybe these are just more diverse people than they've ever gone to school with. Maybe wizards don't have school before Hogwarts or they're homeschooled before Hogwarts. I don't know. But it's really interesting. There's like social learning that's happening here as well as just their general education.
You know, I that's an interesting question. It does kind of seem almost as though students just are kind of homeschooled in a lot of ways. Like it, that they don't really go to school to learn magic and everything else until, you know, they go to Hogwarts or whatever school that they end up going to magically. And so, yeah, that's an interesting thing. I'd never actually thought about that fact that they're not in school before this, before 11 years
right,
old.
Right. We know Harry was because he was at some sort of primary school. And I don't know exactly how the school system in Great Britain works or over in Europe. I only am familiar with our American structure, which I know is probably not the same as theirs. But yeah, I mean, I'm thinking more of like Ron and Ginny and stuff. Like, what do they get before they go to Hogwarts? I mean, we know Harry went to some sort of basic school, but yeah, it's really, I would be interested to know what that actually looked like. So if anybody knows, let me know.
Yeah, definitely. Send us a note. Let us know how that works. But you're absolutely right because, you know, Ginny's not at school with them and she won't be until next year. And so what does she do? And you could definitely see Mrs. Weasley being, a homeschool teacher with her.
Mm-hmm. At least for the first, you know, 5 years or so.
Exactly. And it does seem to me that if you read the Harry Potter books, very traditional in the sense of families and mothers don't seem to work. At least we don't see any mothers that work because all the mothers that we know are, you know, with their kids.
That's actually not true. Neville's mom worked.
She did?
Neville's mom was
an Auror, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting then. How does that work? Like, what do you do with your kids
until they're 11?
Do they have any kind of school? That is a great question. We should tweet J.K. Rowling that.
So, what do kids do before they're 11?
What do kids do before they're 11? Is there other magical education before then, or do they have primary?
Yeah, do they have like primary wizarding school? Because we also know that a lot of the wizarding families, especially the purebloods like the Weasleys and stuff, they don't have any interaction with Muggles. So it's not like they went to a regular Muggle school in the neighborhood and just then transferred to Hogwarts. Yeah. Like,
that's a great.
They
question.
Don't really have any connections with other kids before this, so it's very odd.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they go on like family outings and stuff. They go to like Diagon Alley. They're familiar with all that stuff. You know, that kind of thing happens. Major sporting events, I guess, as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That is such a fascinating question. I really would love JK to answer that. I might actually try and tweet her.
It's actually going to eat at me now too because I'm not going to know the answer. Oh,
gosh.
Well, the real climax of this chapter.
Exactly. The real climax. It has to do with a troll.
Does not have to do with wizarding pre-K.
No, not at all. And I think it's the first big action sequence that we get in the book. Well, besides Fluffy. But one where all three of our main characters are really involved and they finally come together. And what was interesting to me was that it's Harry who's like, what about Hermione? And I love that it's Harry that is the one who's thinking of other people because it just makes it makes sense. And it just shows so much character that he has, which is so beautiful for him, and the goodness that comes out of a character who's, again, you know, just been mistreated to be like this is pretty incredible. And I love that, you know, Ron's like, okay, fine, but Percy better not see us.
I know, right? He doesn't care about dying. He just doesn't want to get caught by his brother.
Well, then what's fascinating too is that I forgot in the book that they see Snape not heading down to the dungeon.
Right. Because that's just alluded to in the movie.
Yeah. And Harry's like, what, why isn't, what is he doing?
That was good. Yeah. What?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty much what it was.
I don't know.
I don't care.
Search me. So they have that happen. But the other thing that's different than the movie, and I think is fascinating, the boys actually have a great plan. They're going after Hermione, and they're like, oh, we'll just lock this troll in this room. But then the room they locked her in turns out to be the bathroom with Hermione.
I know, that would totally happen to me. Just like, what luck? What luck that the place we happen to find the troll is where the person we're looking for is, and we kind of just locked it in with her. Crap.
Well, and what is fun about this, too, is that everything that happens makes so much sense for where the characters are right now. The fact that Hermione is scared out of her wits and having a hard time moving. But the fact that these two boys are just like, well, what do? You know, and then they just start doing stuff. They start yelling at it. They start throwing things at it. You know, Harry even thinks in his head how dumb it is to run and try and jump on this thing. But he's going to do it anyway. And then, of course, Ron actually turns out to be even a bigger hero here in the book because he thinks of the spell all on his own. He doesn't have to be told to do anything. It just pops into his brain and he does it and he, you know, knocks out the troll, which this is the first instance where the movie does a disservice to Ron, I think.
Yeah, because Hermione, in the movie, Hermione kind of tells him how to do the spell again. And
just swish and flick.
I don't know if it's necessarily a disservice to Ron because I feel like in the movie they were just trying to solidify the fact that like there was this budding friendship and she was just trying to help him. Right. Like she was trying to be there to be on his side, be like, hey, I know you can do it. And, you know, I'm just reminding you because he did come up with it kind of on his own. I still feel like. But yeah, I mean, it makes more sense that she's terrified out of her mind and not that she can read Ron's mind and know what he's going to do. So,
yeah, I think as we look through the book, these kind of things are going to kind of start to add up for us with Ron. And as we do through the series, it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, I think
and
you're
so
right.
It's not that it's necessarily a disservice, but I think what it does is it takes away a hero moment from a character where it's just totally his moment. And this, you know, she even describes it. He just cries the first spell that came into his head, you know, and together, him and Harry turn out to be, you know, heroes. And then what's wonderful is the way in which Hermione repays that to be her own hero, which is to take the responsibility on herself and tell a bold-faced lie to some professors, which is awesome. I love that Ron's like, Hermione Granger telling a downright lie to a teacher? That's what he's thinking. It's fantastic.
I know. Well, it's funny because it's not expected with a character that we've been presented with so far. You know, the character we've been shown is sort of a know-it-all, do-gooder, like super follows the rules. And here she is kind of taking all the credit when really she didn't do anything wrong. I mean, she was in the bathroom crying because she had her feelings hurt and she easily could have just been like, well, I was in here minding my own business and then you came hunting for the troll, you know?
Yeah, I just had to go to the loo and they bust in.
Right. I just had to pee and then these guys. I mean, do you believe these guys?
No. I absolutely love it. And what I like is the way that Rowling uses this to bond them together forever. And she found a very fun...
It's a very interesting way to have done it that isn't so straightforward of... Ron apologized, you know, Hermione accepted it and apologized back, and then everything was hunky-dory. She kept it within their characters, you know, she gave sort of a character arc to Hermione. She just made it a very interesting way for them to have bonded, to create that, like, sense of loyalty without it being, like, and then they were loyal, like, it was sort of known, and she follows up with, you know, but from that moment they became friends or whatever. But it wasn't like, thanks, Hermione. Thanks, Ron. Like, it wasn't so straightforward.
Yeah. The thing that I really like is that she gives them a war moment. You know, a moment of extreme, you know, stress and just something that, you know, and the way that she describes it, you know, unless you have gone through knocking out a mountain troll together, you know, that's one of those things that keeps you together. That experience is one of those things that's going to bind people together, like, you know, men being in foxholes in war. That just, it's just the way it is. And so she puts them in the foxhole or in the bathroom together and, you know, they come out fast friends. And it's such a fun, quick way to be able to do that, that I don't feel like cheated by, you know, and mainly it's because I think of the way in which Hermione sees what these boys did for her. She's able to put aside the snarky things that Ron said, realize they risked their lives for her, and she turns around and does that exact same thing for them and covers their butt, which the rest of the series, they're going to spend this whole series covering each other's butts with the professors and everything and all their adventures. And it really sets the stage for the rest of the series and what's going to happen. And so I think it makes it that kind of pivotal chapter in the book, because things start to turn from here. You know, we get all of the other things, like it's Quidditch and the Mirror of Erised, and all of the other stuff starts to happen to them that gets really fun and fascinating as we continue to dive into this world. And goodness, I'm so excited. I love this, you know?
I know. I think it's interesting too. So I have been documenting Harry's tribe as he grows it. Right now it fits on a single piece of paper, but we'll see how long that lasts.
I love it.
with what point that the person became like part of the tribe, right? Because like Hermione, we met her chapter 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, but they weren't really friends until just now. So interesting to make my little tribe. We'll see how big and serial killer like it gets. I'm interested to see where the web takes us.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Well, Drea, before we go, where can everybody catch up with you if they've got some comments or thoughts, or maybe they have an answer for our question about, you know, what these kids were doing before the age of 11?
Yes, specifically that one. Specifically, if you know what wizard children get up to before they go to school. You can find me on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman. And Matt, where can they tell you the answer so if I'm unavailable, I can hear from you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram at MRushing. You can also find me on the Trek FM network, where I am doing The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. And I'm also doing the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show. We talk about all of the geekdoms around the universe, the wonderful fandoms that we love on that show. So I hope you will check it out. Harry Potter is one of them. We've covered all the films there. So please check out the 602 Club. Drea is on a ton of those Harry Potter episodes that we did. Star Wars.
I'm on this one.
Yes, exactly. Star Wars, the 602 Club collection, you can find as well. All that's on iTunes. Here on the Nerd Party Network, I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars. Honestly, we just have so much fun talking about it. I hope you will join us there. We pick a fun kind of random topic each week about Star Wars. We just recently talked about the Darksaber that showed up in Clone Wars and Rebels. And so, yeah, that's the kind of thing that we do. We love dissecting and diving in and just having a great time doing it. So check that out. Well, thank you, everybody, for checking your outposts.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.